We're waiting for some music. I thought we had music on this show. Oh, there it is. Someone's sleeping.
We made it. I'm here.
No,
I'm here.
We did it. It's fine. We're good.
Good afternoon.
Hi, everybody.
Surfing the net. Hi.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Clatch. You're listening to Voice of Vashon. 101.9 on your radio dial. Don't you wish we had a radio dial?
We do somewhere.
There's little dials on the board, but there's no dials on the radio.
That's true.
I like that. We're glad you're here with us, and we are broadcasting from the Jean Bosch Studio in downtown Vashon, Washington. I'm your host, Linda Nygaard, and my co-hosts are with me today, Heidi Skrypak.
Hello.
And Susan McCabe.
Hello.
Hi. And today we have a guest in the studio, too, so we're very excited. We're so happy to welcome Susan Powell.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, everybody.
All right. A little bit about Susan. We'll hear more later. But I met Susan, who lives here on Vashon, in the before times. And then we found that we had a lot of things in common. And then through the COVID situation, we really didn't see each other or didn't have much communication. But we made up for that this summer.
Talk.
And we've become reacquainted. And I thought you'd like to know her, too. She's a very talented woman, a gardener, a reader, a cook, chef, all kinds of interesting and a little bit mischievous, just a little bit.
I like her already.
Yeah. Hello, Susan.
Hi.
Welcome. Yay. Glad you're here. So usually we do our COVID update first to how are we all doing with COVID? You know, I think for me, I'm just stunned at the ivermectin thing. That I read an article the other day that ivermectin prescriptions are on the ramp. I mean, there's a million of them out there, and people are asking their doctors for them. Not here, of course, but...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's really bad. And I, you know, I don't know what our numbers are currently here. The last I saw was 159, I think.
That's total over the entire period of
right,
the pandemic.
Right.
Okay, we're doing great in the scheme of things.
We're... at the level of 1 per 10,000, which is really good.
Yeah, it is.
That's our population. Yeah. So,
except I found today I got really jealous because Denmark is open, all the way open.
Wow.
And that's because when it first hit, they started requiring vaccination ID to go anywhere
a year and
a half ago.
Oh, that's so great. Wow.
And now they're open. There's no COVID.
They were thinking ahead.
There's one person on a ventilator in the hospital in Denmark. That's it.
Boy, I bet he's getting special. He or she is getting special treatment.
I bet so, too.
Oh, good.
But if they're open, how would they want anybody to come in and mess up their numbers?
Oh, that's true.
Well, that's true.
Bring disease.
Yeah.
Oh. Sort of like the Christians brought to the Indians.
Sort of like Idaho's exporting their ICU patients to Washington because they're vaccinated. They have beds available.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go not pollute. That many.
No, you're right.
I did find a story about ivermectin.
Would you like to hear it? Sure.
Ivermectin saved my best friend's life. I'm here to share my story. A few months ago, I found out that my best friend was sleeping with my wife. I was devastated and filled with rage. But the week before I planned on murdering him, I was diagnosed with COVID. Since I am not vaccinated, I took ivermectin to treat it. It did not work at all. Now I'm in the hospital and I can barely walk, let alone kill my best friend. Ivermectin saved his life.
Oh my God, saved his life.
His life.
Is that a true story? I wonder if that's a true story.
Indirectly, I could see how it saved lives.
I can too.
That's pretty good. Nicki Minaj tweeted yesterday.
What?
And good old Tucker Carlson. I only saw this on Twitter. It's not because I watch Fox News. Thank you very much. He retweeted, she writes, my cousin, his friend, caught COVID. Or no, sorry, I'm going to screw this up. He got the vaccine for COVID, and now his testicles are super swollen.
Oh, I heard about that.
It's called an STD. Go get a chlamydia test.
You better go get checked, honey, because that has nothing to do with COVID.
Sorry. Nice try. Yeah. Is that what you told
and
your girlfriend?
How close are you to this guy?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But the fact that Nicki Minaj tweeted that, not a good thing. Disinformation is wrong in a really broad way.
And a lot of people listen to her.
I know.
You know, that age group.
Yeah. She's Trinidadian.
I don't know much about her, really.
She's a trippy lady.
I like the name.
Yeah.
It's fun to say.
Yeah.
Nicki Minaj.
And then Delta is raging through China. My son Alex, who's there in Jingzhou, they've been locking down cities left and right through central China.
Oh my goodness.
And even if it's just a little spread of it, mm-hmm. they just lock it down. Lock it down.
Wow.
And the people are so compliant because they're obviously
well, they are
monitored and right by everybody.
It'd be interesting to see what their percentages are compared to ours.
I'm interested too.
I'd like to find that out.
Oh, and let's support the idea of authoritarian government. Wouldn't that make certain Republicans
really
happy?
No, it has nothing to do with authoritarian. The conclusion I would make is that if you stay home, it works.
Right.
Doesn't matter what kind of government you're under.
And chose to stay home.
Yeah, right.
Sinovac versus Pfizer and Moderna that we had here. So different vaccines. So there's a bunch of wild cards to try to do apples to apples.
I know. Yeah. There are.
But yeah, Moo's happening. Moo's big in Hawaii, Alaska.
Is that the one from South America? Because Delta came from India.
I'm not sure the origins of Moo, but it's starting to crop up pretty good in Hawaii and Alaska. And there was one more state, and it's over my head now.
Is it different from
Delta? Actually, there's more than one. Oh, yeah.
How so?
There's four variants now.
It's newer.
It's a newer variant.
It's newer and more pervasive than even Delta.
Mm-hmm. More contagious than?
More contagious. And it's got more viral load than the original. And
so that capacity for viral load seems to be increasing with every variant.
Exactly right. Huh. As it mutates, get your beeping vaccine.
Really?
Yes, get your beeping vaccine. That's a good idea. Anything else on COVID?
I think that's enough.
That's good.
Yeah, that's plenty. I didn't know about Moo, so I'm just...
It's spelled M-U.
Mm-hmm. As in mutation.
I thought it was Moo.
Now you can remember it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hear you catch it from dairy products.
I love it. If only.
Yeah, you probably do. Let's just move right on to tidbits.
Your tidbits.
The tidbits.
Yes. What have you got?
Well, today, you know, something weird. So the University of Sydney is studying octopuses. I thought the word was octopi.
I think it is.
Is it in England and is UK octopuses? Because in The Guardian it says octopuses.
There's a second adoption of a pluralization of octopus and it is octopuses. It is legit.
It is legit.
Thank you, Heidi.
How do you know this?
Because I used to read the writer's art by the guy in the Seattle Times and it was in there like 20 years ago.
And she swims with them.
And she swims with the octopuses. Yeah, she does.
Okay.
Anyway, they're studying octopus behavior at a site in Gervais Bay, which is just outside of Sydney. It's a beautiful place. But the reason they can study it there is that there's lots of rocks and places for them to hide and build their dens, whereas the rest of the beach is pretty sandy. So what they have found is that these octopuses will hold silt, algae, or other objects such as shells under their bodies in their tentacles. And then, and they shoot a jet of water at anything that's out there that they want to shoot at, and that propels the whatever it is they're holding, the shell. It's several body lengths.
Whoa.
And in 2016, when they started this study, one female octopus threw silt 10 times at a male from a nearby den who was attempting to mate with her. She hit him on 5 occasions. And Godfrey Smith, who's directing the study, said that was the sequence. That sequence was one of the ones that convinced me her hurling things at him was intentional. In addition, listen to this. The throws used during den building were almost always shot between the front two tentacles. But when throwing at others, the octopus is sometimes angled to throw between the first and second on the left or right. This suggests a kind of targeting. On one occasion, the researchers saw an octopus throw a shell at and hit another octopus by flinging it like a frisbee. Nah, true.
That's such a great visual.
I know. I just love it. But anyway, so So the team's decided to release all these findings, and they're working on the paper right now. And their next thing is they're suggesting that polar bears sometimes use rocks or lumps of ice as weapons during hunting and mating season.
Oh my goodness!
So you know, I kind of got on a bent this week about animals and humans.
Okay.
And kind of how we're alike
and tool use.
And how, yeah, and tool use, and you know, the war of the sexes.
I like it.
There's a
I can see a polar bear throwing a huge chunk of ice at a hunter.
I can too.
Boing.
That'd be pretty good. That'd be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Painful.
Okay, so the next animal thing is there are a million tiny fruit flies who live in a laboratory at the University of Southern California.
In my kitchen.
Yeah, sometimes we think they are, that's for sure. Yeah. They're not buzzing around, but they're in little vials. And this a team of studiers, scientists, provide raw material for their experiments using flies as models to study genomic analysis of social behavior.
I dig it.
Okay, so through our research, we aim to understand the genetic basis of complex behaviors, such as courtship, group formation, aggression, and learning. Particularly interested in understanding the evolutionary and developmental consequences of interactions between individuals' genes / environment, how each affects their behavior.
Yeah.
And what they have found is that there are aggressive male fruit flies and there are shy male
passive
fruit flies. Yeah, the passive.
They're called Tony and Eric.
Yeah.
Okay, so several male flies waited for females to arrive at the bait, and the bait was fresh fruit and, you know, dead yeast and that kind of stuff.
Were they hot?
They were hot. They were dressed to the nines. And as soon as a female landed, two males approached. One of them appeared to temporarily forget the female as he switched to head off his rival.
Ooh.
So he forgot about the girl, and he was just going to beat up the other guy. And then the males reared up on their hind legs and tussled before the loser scurried away.
Oh, man.
I mean, they're just like, they're like people, and they're trying to see if their mating behavior resembles human mating behavior because of the social environment that they're in.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're trying to understand the social complex of all of that. And I, you know, it's just interesting, and I have no conclusion to draw.
I want to know the outcome of that study.
Yeah, well, we'll have too. To keep in touch with it, I guess. Oops, yeah. I'm off the mic. Let me see. Oh, okay. And what was surprising was that we found it wasn't the aggressive males. It was the shy and retiring males that the
Eric
women
and
wanted.
Bruce. Mm-hmm. The women mm-hmm. wanted the nerd.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They wanted the nerd.
Because they knew he was going to grow up to make $1 billion.
That's right.
In tech.
And they've translated it into human terms by giving the example of someone who was constantly rejected in high school, who thus tends to be shyer and more socially awkward in the outside world.
But he gets the girl.
Gets the girl.
I like it.
Those nerds grew up to be the most interesting men.
Yes.
Well, I think so too. Huh. I do.
Compassionate.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say good in bed, but I like that.
Compassionate.
I don't think that has to do with nerdiness.
What if they're unleashing their inhibitions?
I'm
going to
keep track of this research study.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, you know, if they couldn't get the girl because they were macho and football players, they were looking to develop other attractive skills.
Yes.
Well, yeah, we would hope.
Yes, yeah. We really would.
We really would. We want some more skills.
Yay. I like that.
I have one more.
Yes.
Bring it. And this is Pompeii, you know, Pompeii, where Mount Vesuvius and had a fast food joint. It had a fast food joint.
How do we know?
Well, the archaeologists have uncovered, they started in 2019. They uncovered a frescoed relic, which had been preserved by the ash, and it is in the north of Pompeii's archaeological park. They discovered a floor made of polychrome marble, as well as the remnants of duck bones and pigs and goats and fish and snails.
Wow.
In earthenware pots. And they believe that one of the dishes on the menu was a type of paella.
Yeah,
because they saw the rice and they saw the shrimp and they you know, stuff was still left in those two bodies they found.
World's first recipe, paella.
Paella, maybe
yes.
So.
Yes,
to
yeah.
go.
Yeah. Yeah,
to
so,
go.
In a little clay dish.
So they did find two bodies that were perfectly preserved and they were believed to have died as they were fleeing the eruption. And this place was... like a fast food place where the worker people came mm-hmm. to eat lunch when they or dinner, and they even showed, like, if you can imagine a long counter, and it's tile from the countertop down to the floor, and it's painted fresco with roosters and bouquets of flowers and ocean waves, and
wow.
then on top of that counter are bowls, indented bowls, serving bowls that are just. What do we call those things where, you know, like we use the steam rack or whatever at the buffet at the hotel. But these yeah. were like in stone,
warmers.
In marble.
Did they have fire underneath them?
Yes, they had fire underneath
oh,
them.
Wow.
And so it was keeping everything warm. And people would come through that line and dish up their plate and go eat.
Okay.
Nobody knows anything about costs or anything. I don't know. I mean, it could, I don't know. Your sanitation or
and
any of that.
And then you said marble, too.
And marble on the floor all
That's
over.
So
it's
deluxe.
Just beautiful. Yeah. Yes.
Sounds like my dream kitchen.
Definitely.
And then...
you hose it down.
Then they... you don't have to scrub it. And then they also discovered a sorcerer's treasure trove with relics including crystals and buttons made of bones and glass beads and mirrors and all kinds of put a spell on you stuff.
I love it.
So I just thought that was really, really interesting. And it is now open to the public.
That's the coolest part.
You can
right
go
there.
Do a
that
tour.
Is cool.
Yeah, it's open to the public.
Are they serving paella?
Well, I would think they should. That would be a good marketing trend for them to
now
do.
Now serving snails.
The words.
But that's the coolest story. I love
know.
That.
I do too. I thought it was really fun.
I imagine a commissary kitchen, you know, some sort of cafeteria for the workers.
Yeah.
Whatever they were.
And I think it would be, I'm going to do a little more research on it and see if I can find some more photographs of, like, where there's no place that they show where it was prepped.
Oh,
or how
yeah.
they cook. They just show the finished part in the restaurant part where you walk through and there isn't any.
So there's no kitchen attached.
Well, there must be. There has to be.
That's
but I didn't see any pictures of it. So
yeah, it makes you wonder where it came from. Boy, wouldn't you like to just slip back into that time?
Yeah.
And see.
Be there and see it.
Yeah.
Was it before it blew?
Were the bowls recessed?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It was hard to describe when you can't look at the picture, but yes, the bowls are, they're big, huge divots in the countertop. And the countertop, of course, is marble and tile. So it's just beautiful.
Man.
I know.
Wonderful. Spare no expense back
exactly.
in the day.
Exactly. Well, and when you think of today's kitchens in, like in Italy, and look at the frescoes they have in the kitchens and all those hand-painted tiles and stuff, that's been going on forever. If this kitchen was that fancy, and I loved it that they thought it was the first... Fast food place.
Yeah,
I love that. We probably need to take a station break.
I bet we do. We love our underwriters.
Yes, we do.
All right. We love them so much. We're going to go ahead and say thank you.
Voice of Vashon thanks Windermere Real Estate for its support, making our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at WindermereVashon.com.
VOV programming support is provided by the Hardware Store Restaurant, serving great good food, free Wi-Fi, and signature cocktails in an historic 125-year-old building, the heartbeat of Vashon Island, on the web at thsrestaurant.com.
And we're back.
Hello.
Everything's working.
Everything's working. We just switched around some mics and some chairs. Hang on here.
Very good.
Technical difficulties.
Technical.
Yeah, we're having a couple technical difficulties. Okay, so we have a little bit of chatting to do about Airbnb, VRBO, and Vashon rentals.
A controversial subject. It's basically housing on Vashon.
Housing on Vashon.
As a microcosm of the nation.
Well, you know, I know two people very well who are trying to find a place to live and they can't. So then we started talking about it and wondering how much does Airbnb have to do with that? and how much, you know, VRBO, et cetera. And Heidi, I know you did a little bit of research on Vashon's numbers.
I did.
Can you share some of that with us?
So on Airbnb and on VRBO, if you were to put in Vashon as a search, they would tell you there's more than 300. But as you click through and you get through subsequent pages by about page 5 on each of those sites, it's really only about 200. And some of those are overlapping listings from site to site, which means we can easily say there are 200 vacation rentals on the island just on those sites alone. And that's if they are all duplicated. So there's probably more like 300 to 400. And then if you figure there's about 4 people per household in the American family or any household. And if you want to say there's 10,000 people on the island, would that mean there's 25 homes, which would mean there's at least, we'll just say roughly 1 in 10 homes on the island will be rentals, vacation rentals. That's just rough numbers, but that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's really, you know, a lot.
Especially when people are looking for places to live year round. And there is some rumor, I don't know if you were able to confirm this, that a lot of these Airbnbs here and elsewhere are being purchased by corporations.
Yes.
I don't know if that is hearsay or if that is
verifiable. And not vacation homes, just single family homes are leaving the market by large investment groups. And Zillow, our source of
numbers and dollars and investing.
Originally it was valuation and pulse on the market type stuff. And then they started getting their hands in the game.
Yeah.
And what we see now are all these different types of products. They do loans. They do everything. They do fantastic screenings for rent. If you're a landlord and you need a rental check done.
They do that too. Wow, they're doing everything.
But I use them because we have a little cottage that we have on our property, and it's just a studio cottage. We rent it very competitively. It has its own washer dryer and all that out the door. It's also practically just a stone's throw from my house. So I want to vet somebody who I know isn't going to skip out on their rent, who's reliable. Anyway, I'll get back to the other topic, but I wanted just to say, you know, for $29, they'll screen credit check, rental history, and criminal background check.
Wow.
And
$29.
$29.
Wow.
So as a landlord or a property owner, you just have the prospective tenants, plural, fill this out. They go and do it themselves. It comes to you. All you have to do is put the actual rental up so that they have a reference when they apply. And then it comes back almost immediately with whether or not they're a good risk. Anyway,
that's pretty scary, actually.
It's really scary, but it's extremely innovative. But what they've done is taken it a step further now. Zillow is just one of many, but Zillow is a great example of this savvy, you know, algorithm type centric company that knows how to use the data to their advantage, and they can see when homes have turned and they can see, you know, oh, maybe there's an opportunity to buy this up. This property hasn't moved in years and years. There's probably some little granny in there who wouldn't mind selling. And so they know what to do. Or if taxes, I mean, you can do it. We can all do it and see who's not paying their taxes and try to pay the tax and do the thing, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ways, but this is a trend, and homeownership, Our value of our dollar is diminishing with inflation. And the Fed, we keep getting more and more money printed. And so the value of the dollar is going down. What that means is your, you know, stocks and bonds and those kind of things don't really have as much weight. The real assets and the wealth is in real estate and farmland. Bill Gates is the largest farmland owner in the country.
Is that right?
The owner.
The Midwest,
Yeah. He owns the most farmland in the United States now.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God. He's taken it over.
I have heard that, yeah.
And so land is the new gold. It's the new gold standard. Even gold, you know, is kind of messed up and not a perfect store of assets. But property is. And
land has always been the gold.
Right? Land has always been.
True.
That is true.
Yeah.
Just today, we were watching a testimony in court with finance, and There was a man speaking, Scott was his last name, so eloquent. And he was talking about there's sort of three ways to get to wealth as an American. Home ownership is one of those three. And I'm trying to remember the other two.
Generational wealth.
Probably just
inherited a bunch of it.
But it was so true. And I just, and his other point was that the access to that wealth is getting more and more diminished. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Except for getting in on crypto is really easy to do. Anyone can do it. There's not huge fees of entrance to enter it. But it's also kind of an unknown. And there's a lot of regulatory issues still to be determined. Back to housing. Housing is at a dearth everywhere in the country.
But in the whole country, it's not just Vashon.
Yes.
Right, in the whole country. And I think the corporations, the difference between land was gold like 50 years ago and land was gold now is that it is no longer available to the average middle-class American, which is shrinking middle-class America.
Yes.
And the supposed American dream is evaporating. Not that it was ever really true.
Let alone the black and Latinx.
That's right.
Exactly.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Black and brown people never did have access, but now it's they and lower income Americans. And so the corporations are buying the houses and they become the controllers of the majority of wealth in the country.
Mm-hmm. They're sweeping in and they're buying multifamily apartment buildings and they're jacking the rents dramatically. I have a friend in Idaho who had this happen. Zillow Investment Group bought their building.
Oh, Lord.
And their rent went from $700 a month to $1,450.
Oh, my. Woo!
But they had 90 days to either get it done or get out.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There's no protections when this happens. It's crazy.
Oh, that's awful.
No landlord-tenant laws. No.
I mean, they're working
not
within
like
the
that.
Law.
If your property sells, if you're a renter and the property you live in sells, the new owner can charge you whatever the new owner wants to, unless you have.
There's some protection. Like if you have a year lease.
If you have a year lease, you have to do there's certain things they have to do or they can buy you out or
exactly.
they can do those
kinds
of things.
And that's kind of nice to be bought out. I've had that happen to me and I'm like, I'll take the money and the deposit back.
We'll find
Bye.
A new place.
Yeah, so then you can actually get a deposit somewhere else, maybe.
That's the thing. If you're going to sell, where are you going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where are you going to go?
I know.
I seriously ask that question because I look at him and go, oh, my valuation, hot damn.
Yeah.
But what does that mean? Yeah, what does that mean?
I can't stay here with that. No, I might be able to go to Arkansas.
Exactly.
But why?
Yeah, or Niagara Falls. Live at Love
Niagara
Canal.
Niagara Falls.
Well, so how do you see it? I mean, do you see any solution to this? Is this ever going to stop?
Mm-mm.
I don't think so.
Well, you know, they tried to capture that solution in Amsterdam. Because they were experiencing similar problems.
Okay.
And they, the Netherlands folks, decided that they were going to limit the ability for homeowners to rent their homes out short term. So in Amsterdam, if you are the owner of the home, you can rent it out for a maximum of 30 days per year, which kind of puts a kibosh on, gee, I'd be an Airbnb. I'm probably better off doing a long-term rental.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that was a government imposition.
Mm-hmm. That's what it takes.
You know, and from my personal standpoint, I don't have any trouble really with an Airbnb that if someone lives there and they have an extra room or a little cottage or a basement or a, you know, whatever, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to rent to a family anyway, you know?
That's right.
Long term. So if they can make a little money there and bring some tourism to Vashon, that's really good. But there are people who aren't living in the homes and the homes sit empty.
Yeah, the absentee thing.
Yes. Yeah. And one of the things I read too is that investors are buying these homes all over the country and then they sit empty because they're just letting them sit there for 5 or 10 years, decaying and falling apart, and they'll still be worth more money.
Oh, yeah. They're making money either way. They win. They win because maybe they don't want to deal with being landlords. Or any of that. And then the eviction moratorium is the other piece of this.
Yeah.
And it's gone away for the most part, or about to go away unless there's local legislation that offsets that. And so people are screwed. And I think the homeless population is going to grow and grow. Or we're going to see much more Ohana-style living like you do in Hawaii, where the generations yes. dogpile into one household.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Mm-hmm. We've got two generations in my house, and when Alex comes back from China to work in the U.S. in a couple of years, he's planning to also shack up at our house.
Sure.
So then we'll have three generations.
Have three generations.
That's kind of cool.
I don't mind.
Yeah.
Well, I think yeah. it is. I mean, there are a lot of societies that do that. You just move in together.
What are you going to do otherwise?
Grandma moves in and some of the kids move in.
And what about old folks' homes, you know?
Oh, and VCC is going out of business.
What happens there? Eeks!
I thought Vashon Community Care was it not established before I moved here
mm-hmm.
for community care as a nonprofit?
It was. It was a community asset
at one time.
But the various boards ran into financial trouble, and first they had healthcare organizations that took over the management, and then they sold the whole thing to a corporation called Transforming Age.
That was the most recently.
Giving up of that facility as a community asset. Yes. Well, I can't swear to that.
We had a discussion about this the other day with the friend whose parent was there.
Uh-huh.
And evidently she had to give quite a bit of money to get taken care of there.
Yeah, I think it's darned expensive. And as are many care residences, right. if you mm-hmm. will, mm-hmm. they require a large portion of all your assets, unless you're indigent. And then you have to be sure that you have no assets and you get to go to a state home.
Yeah.
The in-between ain't happening.
Mm. Well, it's, you know, the housing thing is, I think it's an emergency.
Oh,
it's an emergency, and I feel very lucky to live where I live. Really lucky, and I'm not going to go anywhere for a long time.
Mm. Good.
But my heart breaks for people. You know, people have kids in school here. They have jobs here. I don't know. And then you see help wanted signs in all the stores, and not all the stores, mm-hmm. in many stores, but they can't find help because people can't afford to live here and they can't pay the ferry fee to commute for service jobs.
That was part of the problem with VCC, I think.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so too.
They had staffing issues. They couldn't staff it.
And then now I hear they're talking about turning it into supported housing or low-income housing.
Well, I say bring it on.
Yeah, I do too.
Well, yes and no. I have some mixed feelings about that.
I want to hear why.
If it returns to being a community asset for low-income housing mm-hmm. and the community has something to say about how it's used, I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
if it's Transforming Age, which is a not-for-profit organization making more money on low-income housing, and I did a little research, and they have a whole lot of low-income housing.
Stop. Over
the region.
Keep talking.
All over the region. So they are moving from...
oh, my God.
From elder care to this, quote, low-income housing.
Oh, my.
And there were at least a dozen properties.
So are you saying they're going to try to do that here?
Possible.
Yeah, that's
very
possible.
Well, I'm going to make a sign.
Well, I think...
do it.
Okay. I think one of the things that this community should do is have a consortium of folks who either want to buy that back for the community.
Yeah.
Let's turn it into a combined, a mixed-use facility where some of those residents who are there now and don't have anywhere to go can live, and we can have child care, infant care, and perhaps a new health care clinic all in one place.
That'd be nice.
Wow.
That is owned by the community. Not by
a
corporation.
There's a project.
Yeah, there is.
Susan, you've given us some thought and I'm digging it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Wow.
Spread the word.
Holy mackerel.
You know, because I think Transforming Age owns that building now.
I'm going to have to look that up.
We got to get on it.
I know.
We got to get on it.
This is big, though.
It is really big.
That's a thank you, we don't want it
thank
to become
you.
Another K2.
No.
And it would be nice if it could actually be a community asset and not another place for rich old people.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And on that note, I'm going to change subjects.
Go ahead.
I would like to talk a little bit about some simpler times that we've all known about.
Nice. Bring it.
And Susan's going to guide us through some of that. You know, Susan lived off the grid for what, 13 years?
12.
12 years.
Yeah.
In a place that's very dear to my heart, although I've never been there. What? I always wanted to go. Humboldt County.
Cool.
And
it's legendary.
Yes, legendary. Susan's legendary. So she, I'm going to let her tell you her story, but she is a pretty remarkable person. And what I understand is she and her husband moved there. They had a baby. She made a school. Start talking. Mm-hmm. Tell me something about how did you decide to go to Humboldt County?
Well, you know, I don't remember.
Oh, that's
because we know what Humboldt County is known for. What,
yeah, exactly.
Well, but it wasn't when we went there.
Oh, it wasn't?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh.
I'm trying to remember what the political situation was. We kind of thought that the proverbial stuff that's hitting the fan now was going to hit the fan then. That was like in 1970, 71.
Okay, yeah.
And started kind of thinking about that. And my husband's best friend wrote a movie script, and he was given a down payment for it. So he said, let's go buy some land.
Oh.
So
speaking of land as an investment.
Yeah, really?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
And so we traveled on up Highway 101, and we said, well, we'll meet up in the first real estate on the right. And we went to the first real estate on the right, and it turned out that there was a piece of property for sale by right next door to our friend's college roommate.
Oh.
Had bought some property there.
It's all in the family.
So, yeah, it kind of was like, oh, felt like chink, chink, chink. And we went to look at it. And, of course, there was really nothing on it. It had been logged. It was an area, all of Humboldt County had been logged really heavily in the 50s. And it was down a long, lot of dirt road to get there.
Okay, so when you first got there, you drive up, you buy the land, you do the thing, it's all closed.
Right.
And you get there and you're there for the first day.
Yeah.
I mean,
when we moved there?
Yeah.
Well, what we did was we, my husband got a job remodeling houses.
Mm.
And so instead of just throwing it all in the junk pile, he saved the 2x4s and every piece of everything, pulled the nails.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew a big wood pile in the back of our the house that we rented.
Wow.
And then we bought a flatbed truck. We put all that stuff on the flatbed truck,
and
we drove up there with our daughter, who was 8 months old at the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You forgot to mention the infant. Wow.
And so we set up camp.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I think, I was trying to think, at some point we built a water tank.
Okay.
So, you know, like a cistern. There's a gravity flow spring.
Okay.
So we always had water.
That's good.
Wow.
And then we a couple of friends of ours moved up with us to help build the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, of course, no help building the house, but I could keep the home fires burning.
Yeah.
You know? Well, cooked outside. We made a little, took a half a barrel of those cardboard barrels.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And made it adobe thing. And so I had like a little oven, a bread oven or a pie. And
no electricity.
Oh, no.
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 Straight up.
I mean, totally
fire.
Off the grid.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So you mastered temper of the fire and the flame. Of the right.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And the Coleman stove.
That's okay.
Well, that
That's
helps
great.
Too.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
But, yeah, eventually, I mean, it was several years in before we even had a solar panel. So, you know, we moved into the house. It was 16 by 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that there was, up the hill from us, there was a pole forest that had burned.
Mm.
And so instead of using some of the lumber that we had saved, they went up and harvested the poles. And you used a draw knife to get the bark off. And so so we could use those for beams. So we ended up with a second half story, 4 foot walls. And, you know, so you could walk through most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was seasoned.
Yes.
I was going to say. Yeah. I bet it
and
smelled
and a hole
great.
And a ladder to go up.
Yay.
And it had tar paper on it.
Okay.
And plastic in the windows.
I can just see it.
So then we went down to San Diego for some more, the last of our load. And he went in to buy some parts in a parts store or something. And next door there was a an antique and used store, so I went in. And there was this wood stove. Oh, my God.
Like a beautiful cook stove.
Oh, beautiful, no. With the double warming ovens, oh. With the doors up above.
And the angels sang.
And the angels sang. And we went back with that stove.
Oh, I bet you
must have weighed a ton.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it did weigh a ton. And we got it into the house. And the next day, it began to rain.
Perfect timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was perfect timing. It rained 143 inches.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah. One rainfall?
No, just all winter.
Oh,
I see. Was like, that was like in October or something.
So wet.
Or,
oh, man.
Yeah. Humboldt County can be very wet.
Yeah, it sounds like the Northwest.
And the old days in the Northwest.
Yeah, right before drought.
You know, I remember I had a wood cook stove back in the hippie days in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And that thing, I loved cooking on it.
Oh,
and
it's wonderful.
It's just a wonderful, and it had clipper ships engraved in nickel above the on the warming oven and big medallion. It was a really fancy one.
Sounds like a piece of art.
Well, I found it. I bought a little shack in the mountains, in the Rocky Mountains, to live in. I wanted it. And I got it, and remodeling it and doing that kind of thing. But this wood stove was in the cellar, which was a dugout underneath the house, and it was filled with nails and bolts and
holy cow. Oh, because if it wasn't heavy enough to start
right.
with.
No doubt.
So I know what you're talking about when you say, oh my God, the wood stove.
Oh, it's beautiful. Wonderful to cook on because
I know.
You have any temperature that you want, mm-hmm. you just move the pan.
Yeah. You go to the heat. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And the spring is cool too. So our friend Dick, after doing a startup, burnt out in that world, and he bought 250 acres at a place in the Shasta Trinity National Forest border called Mad River. And it's really close to where you were at Humboldt. And he went to Humboldt and he did the same thing. He did a timber frame home with all the lumber off of his land. David helped to mill the the wood, and they
had lumber left. Yeah. Ours had already been done. Oof. And the thing about that, too, is that we were told that those roads would always be maintained.
Ha!
Well, that winter of the 143 inches, now we didn't have...
Oh, no.
We had the stove, but we hadn't, like, stocked up.
Mm.
So the guys would go to town. I stayed home with the baby because what was I going to carry the baby and come back?
No.
And also, every stick that we burned in the stove, we had to dry first in the
oven. Sure you did. Yeah.
We had the house, but we hadn't, quite mastered the whole thing. But every time they went to town, another bridge was washed out.
Oh.
It became like... Because there was so much water going through those creeks, and those bridges were down trees backfilled mm-hmm. with soil.
Wow.
And those trees were rotting and getting pounded. So it became isolated. Every bite of even dog food had to come in at somebody's back.
So you didn't have any refrigeration, though, did you?
No.
Mm-mm. So how did you stockpile provisions?
Well, beans and rice and Parmesan cheese. Hard cheeses don't really need too much. Yeah.
You learn what keeps, huh?
Yeah.
Did you do a root cellar at all?
Not
something
really,
cool?
But we did have a... Yeah, we dug that. Yeah.
You dug a hole in the ground,
we
didn't
dug
you?
A hole in the ground, and it had like a big styrofoam cooler to keep it... the dirt from falling in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You
and then it was...
Yeah. Oops. There's that.
Oh, there's that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We never did really have but we learned to garden, so you always had. And here, I always have something to eat in the garden all year.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any animals, like livestock or chickens or anything?
We did have chickens.
Okay.
Yeah, we had chickens.
Yeah.
We had ducks, and then we had raccoons. We didn't have ducks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dick has
Circle
two Great
life.
Pyrenees to fend off his goats things because
there's
bear and mountain lion
everything.
It's a lot more sophisticated. Yeah. It was a lot more sophisticated now than it was back in those days.
Well, and I'm curious Heidi, did your friend do this 250 acres?
He bought it maybe 20 years ago. He built the house in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were back in the 1970s.
Yeah.
So
what's the difference in the culture from when you were there, Susan Powell,
yeah,
to when your friend was there, Heidi, or is there now?
Massive weed growing operations that divert all the water, many more fires that are a constant
poisoning
threat.
The Eel River with pesticides and rat poisons and chemicals to grow the pot.
Yeah, and guns, more guns.
Oh,
well,
guns,
they're Murder Mountain.
Yes, exactly.
Remember that?
That's the zone.
Is that in the area that you're talking about?
Oh, you can see me in episode 2.
Oh, that's
hello.
Wait a minute.
No. Not that.
But I'm only opening the door to the handmade school building
that you started, right?
Well, no, I merged mine with when my
Well, you started a school.
Yes. Because when we were going, I thought, well, I'm a teacher. I can take care of my own. Mm-hmm. I can teach my own kids.
Yeah.
And then it turned out, well, we had neighbors and they had kids. And so then I started kind of like a little preschool when they were like around 4. And then, 16 by 20.
Yeah.
So pretty much more school than. So they got together and they took down a building that had been flood damaged and was vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And rebuilt it as a school for me to teach it.
You know, repurposing everything.
Yeah.
How diligent and environmentally conscious you were a long time, in the 70s.
Yeah.
And how has that...
And poor.
And poor, of course. Well,
so
sure.
Creative, inventive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how, and that whole movement is still here, but those everyday... recycling the wood or reusing the old chair those sorts of things are kind of gone.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe on the way up again, because I read about it. I don't know. I just think the whole sustainability thing, the way you reuse, repurpose, take care of things. How's that feel now? I mean, do you feel like you brought some of that with you into your later adult life?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
It's I still try to be sustainable. I mean, even more so now,
right.
I think, than we used to. But it's such a different world.
Well,
such a different world.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, I just know, I was married at the time that I bought the little cabin. I was a youngster, married too young. And we were going to do the kind of thing that you were doing, but we were going to do it in Colorado in this little shack we bought that we're going to refurbish and redo. And, we had a huge garden.
Wow.
Huge garden. And did all that. And I did ground my own wheat for flour.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was part of the food thing. We got galvanized trash cans.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just full of, different kinds of beans, rice, and I had a Corona mill, ground the flour, made the most dense, awful bread.
Oh, I bet it was awful. I did too. It was just awful.
You still ate it, didn't you?
Well, you have to. You can't waste it.
Right? Yeah, that's amazing.
But I just, in finishing my little story about my attempt at being that kind of a person.
Yes, I want to hear it.
So we went to Texas, which is where he was from, for Thanksgiving to spend it with his family, and we had a little baby, and we just had a ball down there for the Thanksgiving weekend. I came home, and the weather had been sort of severe in Colorado over that Thanksgiving, and I got home, and our little shack wasn't that well insulated, and there were some things that it needed fixing, and my toilet bowl was frozen solid, and I looked at it, and I went, oh my God. And then I went to my closet. I was unpacking. I went to hang up some stuff in my closet. Well, I didn't realize that there were water pipes behind the closet in the wall, but the wall had already been taken out. So the water pipes were there, and then there was my closet, but I didn't really notice it. Well, of course, the water pipes burst.
Oh,
and all my clothes
were frozen.
Maybe ruined.
And there was... a window that had somehow gotten blown open or broken or something, and snow had drifted into the living room.
Welcome home, Linda. Wow.
And I've got a baby, and I just looked at my husband, and I said, no.
We're done.
We're done. This is it. And in 2 weeks, we had a new house in Denver. I just didn't have the stamina. I couldn't deal.
Well, Colorado is a lot different
than,
I mean, it was never... that cold.
Well, your toilet bowl wouldn't freeze. But we had running water.
You didn't have a toilet bowl.
Oh, my God.
There was an outhouse.
Nothing to freeze.
We're going to take a quick little breaky break and be right back.
This portion of Voice of Ashon programming is brought to you by PSCCU, proud to be Washington's Green Credit Union. Practicing socially responsible banking by supporting sustainability, job creation, local economies, communities statewide, and our environment. Learn more at psccu.org.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
So I have a couple questions for
Hi
you.
Hi there,
Susan.
We're back.
Yes, we are.
We're back.
So I want to know when you decided to embark upon this fabulous off-the-grid journey, were you inspired by a certain guru of it, or were you subscribing to Mother Earth News, or I don't even know if it existed at the time?
Yeah,
Mother
it did.
Earth News was a
yeah.
big
Oh, yeah,
a
big one.
And,
okay.
Oh, something for the whole planet.
Okay.
Diet
for a Small Planet.
Diet for a Small Planet. And I actually met Frances Moore LePay's daughter, came to my restaurant when I was in Ashland. But at any rate, Diet for a Small Planet. And I can't remember what the other thing was.
The Whole Earth Catalog, maybe?
Earth Catalog was a big... And, oh, I read what's the gardening guy? Rodale Press.
Oh, sure.
I read Rodale, you know.
That's like the Santa Cruz thing, right. That whole movement.
Yeah. Right. So I learned, you know, a lot about gardening. Mm-hmm. And I took some classes from some people, a woman down in, when we still lived in San Diego, mm-hmm. with organic and sustainable gardening. Mm-hmm. And so... the books that she turned me on to and stuff too. So that first year I did try to have a garden.
Mm-hmm. That was successful.
It was not, you know, I mean, started in whenever that was.
Yeah, whenever
you
that
know,
was.
There was some stuff and, you know, but, and then we did have out there, we had a wonderful clawfoot tub. And Peter made a tank. It was a 50-gallon drum with a 20-gallon drum inside, and the bottom of the 50-gallon was cut out so you would start the fire there.
Oh, so you heated the water.
So you had 20 gallons of hot water.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice.
Wow. Oh, to lay
For
out
your
in
bath.
That, to lay out there in the tub on a moonlit, or a not, you know, the stars.
Starlit
night. Because you're just so far from everything was just spectacular.
I was just going to ask you what some of your favorite memories are from that time.
Oh, that would be, and then just all of our neighbors and the kids, and
the community
feeling of it. Nobody ever went to town without finding out, you know.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, there weren't telephones. There certainly weren't cell phones. There weren't even telephones, or you know. So if you wanted to communicate with somebody, you walked across your 40 acres to their house, you know, or you sent a kid.
Yes, send a kid.
You get a homing pigeon.
Did you live near a pot farm? I mean, how did that start?
Well, everybody grew
their own.
But it was before it was Sensimilla. Mm-hmm. So everybody had, like in your garden, you'd have some scraggly old, you know,
ditchweed.
Yeah, right. And then the Sensimilla thing happened. And that was maybe 2 or 3 years where it was just kind of more of a community, small time thing. And then the land started being bought up, and then the guys with the big four-wheel drives and the guns in the gun rack.
Was that kind of scary for you?
It was very scary, yeah. It was just like you didn't want to. And then there was the campaign against marijuana. That was a federal thing.
Yeah. Right.
And
the war on drugs.
The war on drugs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the sheriff of Humboldt County, sheriff, had taken very much a hands-off kind of approach to it.
Of course.
Hey, these people are making some money. They're mm-hmm. shopping in town.
They're not hurting
right.
anybody.
Sort of. Yeah. And then the camp thing started, and he was definitely put between a rock and a hard mm-hmm. place.
Yeah.
And people started getting upset. I actually facilitated a meeting that was supposed to be between the growers and the sheriff.
Mm. Oh boy.
And you know, how he was gonna negotiate this new thing, you know?
Yeah. Wow, what a charged atmosphere.
And then they started coming in with the helicopters. Mm.
They being the government?
The government coming in with the helicopters.
Yeah, and they still do?
Yeah, they still do.
Do they still?
Sure, they sweep around. And, well, they're looking for grow operations. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so since...
But now it's legal, so why?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because of the illegal operations. Yeah.
There's ones that aren't licensed.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Unlicensed marijuana growers.
There's a lot. Yeah. They come up from Mexico, and mm-hmm. there's a whole system.
Well, there's a whole cartel thing there now, too. I mean, it's not the same at all. Not the same.
Right, and that's what...
Well, Susan, I don't know if I told you this or not yet, but Susan had her life there and then went to Ashland, Oregon.
That's where I did go.
Yeah, she opened a restaurant. She had a wholesale food business and she was a caterer. What else? There was one other thing.
Crazy.
Well, that too, you know. So, you know, there's just so much knowledge in that head over there across the table.
A lot of resource.
Yeah,
a lot of invention.
Uh-huh. Ashland is so cool. I remember going there and we would just go find restaurants, would sort of wander mm-hmm. through. And I'm like, maybe I ate in her restaurant.
Pilaf was its name.
Yeah.
Pilaf.
Pilaf. What I ended up in Ashland because when I was teaching, we actually had... happened to go there looking, you know, oh, there's a skier on the map, let's go see. And so we went there to ski and then went downtown and I discovered that, you know, I didn't know about the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was also a hostel. So I would take students, I'd take a group of students, like up to 20 kids
from Humboldt.
From Humboldt.
Okay.
To the Shakespeare
Festival.
To ski
in the morning and see plays in the afternoon and mm-hmm. the evening.
I bet they loved you.
Yeah. Oh, it was fun. It was so much fun.
And did they work for you then too?
No, that was before I moved to Ashland.
Oh, I see.
Was taking, you know, 10, you know, 5th and 6th and 7th grade.
I see.
Kids.
Part of your education.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
You are crazy.
Yeah, you are.
Now I know you're crazy.
Well, it's kind of a prerequisite to sitting at this table, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
true.
I feel in good company.
That's good.
That's amazing. So that was sort of market research then. You kind of knew what you were getting into. Mm-hmm. The Ashland, Oregon, you sort of got to try it on these field trips and see what
it's
all about.
I thought that I would, when I moved there, I thought I would continue teaching.
Mm.
But I had a California teaching certificate for life, which was not honored 20 miles over the border. So I had to get my Oregon mm-hmm. teaching certificate. So I started doing that. But in the meantime, I had to work. Mm-hmm. So I got a job in a restaurant. And then one thing sort of led to the mm-hmm. other.
And suddenly she was working 24/7.
You bought the same property or did you buy a different restaurant? Were you invited to buy that one?
Oh, no. It was, I started my own completely different
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. She did her own thing.
But it took about 10 years to do that.
I see. Yeah.
That wasn't until 1996.
I just realized that really one of the things that I wanted to say when I was introducing you, Susan, so we'll just do it now, is that I would like to... other Susan and Heidi and I have talked about that we'd like to do interesting people on Vashon doing interesting things.
Yes.
And you're our first.
You're the first.
You're the guinea pig.
Okay.
And we're going to do that as an occasional series.
Well, I think in the last minute we have, what are you doing on Vashon?
Yeah. What's interesting?
Yeah. How do you like us so far?
Oh, I love it. Before COVID, I substituted at the high school primarily.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Uh-huh.
And I garden and I do, you know, pretty much, especially since COVID, I'm very, very much a homebody.
Oh, you should see the things she does. Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
You want to get an invitation.
Well, I'm digging your story and what got you up the coast.
Yeah.
I'm from San Diego, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time.
We are.
Goodbye, everybody, and thank you so much for listening.
It's been fun.
It's been really fun
to have you,
Susan.
Thanks for joining us, Susan Powell.
Yeah, it was really fun.